Magic Makers, and welcome back to the Metaphysical Apothecary. We are your hosts, Shannon and Megan,
Hi, everyone.
Also known as the Scorpio Sisters, here to explore the mysterious, the magical, and the arcane.
Within witchcraft spaces, there's a lot of pressure to conform to the aesthetic. A lot of us love the aesthetic, all of the trappings, the colors, the herbs, the persona. It's one of the reasons that paganism is so attractive to a lot of different people, because there's a really powerful aesthetic behind it that makes us feel closer to our ancestors. It makes us feel more powerful in ourselves, and it makes us feel closer to the earth. However, there's a problem with this. After a certain point, the aesthetic is just there to be the aesthetic. And while that can help you build energy and create some powerful spell work, it's not always necessary to drag out all of the jars and the crystals, or to have all of the jars and the crystals and every herb under the sun.
Or the cauldron.
Exactly. You don't have to have a cauldron over a fire. If you do, awesome, fantastic. I'm jealous.
Definitely a little bit more than jealous, but sometimes the aesthetic is also contrary to modern building standards too.
Yes. I feel like there's a lot of criticism in certain witchcraft circles for not adhering to the aesthetic. Oh, you don't have all of your herbs in glass jars? They're stored in plastic baggies. That's going to ruin the magic. No, it's not. No, it's not. Scrape people like that off immediately. You don't need them. If plastic baggies is what you have, then that's what you should use. Now, to keep them fresh, you should store them in something other than paper.
Yeah, I buy fresh herbs and then I wrap them in a paper towel. I hang them over my windowsill for a little while. And then once they start to dry out, I put them in a baggie and store them in the refrigerator.
So paper towels, plastic bags, all being used to dry out these fresh herbs for culinary uses, for magical uses, for both.
Yep.
Once herbs are dried, whether I've purchased them dried or dried them myself, I like to store them in airtight containers. Whatever that container is what you have on hand.
Yeah.
If you are the kind of magpie slash goblin witch that can't throw away a good jar, old candle jars make really good herb canisters because they're meant to be airtight to keep the candle from reigniting once it's been put out. Just if you're going to use the herbs for culinary purposes, make sure you're storing them in something that has been made with food safe ingredients. So soy, beeswax, and no essential oils that are just for perfume purposes.
And then, you know, clean it anyway.
But that's a really good example of how modern witches might handle some of their magical ingredients. There's nothing wrong with using modern tools and things that are available in your witchcraft, especially when it comes to kitchen magic, because very few people have a space where they could put a cauldron over a fireplace. Not everybody is cooking in a 17th century kitchen. And to a certain extent, that's a good thing, because the 17th century kitchen didn't always produce food that was the best. Edible. So if you are cooking something that is meant to have a magical correspondence tied to it, it's probably better to cook it using modern method, because it's going to be more nourishing and safer for the people that you're sharing it with. So even though we don't have fireplaces where everyone gathers around the hearth anymore, almost everyone has an oven with a stovetop in their home. And that is very often the center of the home, because that's where all the good things come out of. So they're modern hearths. When I was growing up, very often my dad and I would come home from school. He was a teacher at my school. So he would bring me home from school and my mom would already be there making dinner. So we would just naturally gather with her in the kitchen, and that's where we would be until we were cleaning up after dinner. We would be there with my mom while she was cooking. We would assist her if she needed it. Then everyone would pitch in cleaning up afterwards and go about our business. And that's the way it is now with my modern family, with my wife. Most of the time when she comes home, I'm in the kitchen making dinner, because I worked from home, so I'm already here. And we've agreed that I'm the better cook anyway. So I'm usually in the kitchen making something for dinner. And then we also have little rituals that we do with each other throughout the week. We really like a nice rich cup of hot cocoa, not from the packet. If you like the packets, that's okay. We don't like the packet. I chop my own chocolate. It's unsweetened. Put it in the milk in the saucepan and whisk it up with some maple syrup and vanilla, cinnamon, salt. And that's a little ritual that we do with each other. it's not one of us out there making it while the other one is scrolling through their phone or folding laundry or whatever. That's something we do together. We'll do food prep together and baking together. And we did it using all modern ingredients, but there's a connectiveness and a sacredness to the kitchen space, whether it's a hearth in a cave or an industrial kitchen.
Yeah, the magic of the kitchen really comes from the desire to create things that will nourish and take care of yourself and your loved ones more than the aesthetic.
Yeah, it's also an alchemical space. And I would argue that modern kitchens are more of an alchemical space than the previous version of them
Oh,
because
I would 100% agree.
you can do a lot more in a modern kitchen with modern tools. You can produce a wider variety of food dishes, dressings, marinades, and all kinds of things, cuisines from different cultures. In a modern kitchen, you can cook food from almost any culture, whereas that was not necessarily the case before we had modern kitchens. If you went to China, for instance, their kitchen was set up to cook food from that region. You couldn't go in and make.
Haggis.
Yeah, exactly. And you
Can't
couldn't
do
go into a Scottish person's kitchen and make rice.
that. That's just not how those kitchens were set up to do.
No, but you can bake both of those things at the same time in a modern kitchen.
It really makes fusion cooking an easy thing to do, or easier, I should say. You still need to know what you're doing.
Yes.
It's an alchemical space because you have more ingredients available to you in a modern kitchen, whether it's tools, forks, knives, spoons, ladles, chopsticks, full range of tools that didn't exist in any one particular kitchen previously. But you also have a wide range of seasonings that also did not exist or were difficult to come across because of expense.
Right. I have vanilla pods and whole cinnamon sticks in my kitchen right now.
Those were possible in 17th century kitchens.
Right, not unless you were in the area w in which they grew or were extremely wealthy.
Yeah.
And I'm not extremely
No.
wealthy.
No. Most witches of that time period were not.
No.
Most witches of that time period were also hiding.
So they were hiding in plain sight with creating magic and spell work and things like that at the hearth. And we can do the same thing now. So modern kitchens are also great places to be in the broom closet.
Yeah, it's a natural place to be.
If you are in a situation where you have to be in the broom closet, learning as much as you can about food and cooking and culinary magical correspondences is an excellent way to practice witchcraft incognito. Another thing about modern ranges and stovetops is it's much safer to cook with them than it is with an open flame. Even gas stoves that have an open flame, it's much easier to control it. And you're a lot less likely to burn your house down.
You're less likely to burn your house down. You're also less likely to, catch fire.
Right. If you want to give your gas range a little bit more of a witchy vibe, you can cleanse it on a regular basis. One of my favorite ways to do that is to add a few drops of essential oil or food extract into water in a heat-safe dish, and then just put it in there on low. It's going to make your house smell amazing, first of all. And second of all, it's going to cleanse the energy in there. Something else you can do, you can put a candle or a votive statue on your range or near your range. There are things you can do to make it feel a little bit more cozy and more receptive to magical working.
We do a combination of water and lemon juice in the oven. Sometimes with a hint of vinegar if we feel something was particularly nasty in the house.
There's also something inherently magical about the way that you put something like raw batter or raw meat or raw seasoned vegetables into an oven, and however long later you open the oven and it's been transformed into something not only edible but delicious and nourishing. And it's multifaceted. If you really want to dig into it, you can create an extremely complex multi-level spell just with your oven and the tools that go with it. So you can be baking multiple things in the oven and using all four of your burners on top. If you think about it, a several course meal with dessert is just a huge, complicated spell, and we're able to do that with minimal effort with that tool.
Yeah, if you give yourself enough time, you don't even need an assistant.
No, I've made multi-course meals by myself. Takes a little bit of time, but it's definitely doable, whereas our ancestors were not able to do that.
There's a reason why it was a lot of one-pot meals.
Yes. Whereas each of our pots and pans are different sizes for different uses, allowing us to cook things more precisely. And each of those serves basically as its own type of cauldron. So large cauldrons for big family gatherings or really big needs, like the potion that they cook up in Practical Magic to dump over the gravesite in the backyard. Versus the tiny little saucepan that my wife and I use to make two portions of hot cocoa for ourselves on a Wednesday evening. But that is what that is. That is the hot cocoa pan. We have specific tools that we use to make that particular thing. So it's associated with the coziness, the camaraderie, but it's also associated with all of the magical correspondences of chocolate, of milk, of, all of the ingredients that go into it. So essentially, we're creating this spell for luxury, abundance, good health, and self-love, personal romantic love in that tiny little pan. It's super powerful. We also have a nonstick pan, a flat one that is for eggs. I don't judge anyone, but you have to cook eggs in a nonstick pan unless it's cast iron.
We cook it in a nonstick pan. We have cast iron that could do an egg. We don't.
But again, that's assigned as the egg pan, right? So all of the magical correspondences that go with eggs, or if you're making a frittata or something along those lines, that's all going to be infused with that. So not only do we have multiple cauldrons, a lot of times they seem to become assigned to very specific uses. And if you want to exploit that for your magic, it's really simple to do.
We have a
Okay.
cast iron wok, W-O-K wok. We've decided that the wok is so much better and so much more magical that we make vodka sauce in it. We use the wok for what it's intended, the original cuisine that it's intended for, but then we go a step further. And that's because we have this magical association with that particular wok of it being so much more fun to cook in with vodka sauce and safer. The spitting back at you from the splattering of the tomatoes is a lot less intense. It's just so much easier and better and tastes so much better from the wok than it does from any other pan we've ever tried it with.
We'll talk about fusion cuisine. You were talking about how it reduces the splatter and it's easier to stir. That's what woks are made for. They call it stir fry for a reason. You're literally supposed to be able to pan fry stuff while you're stirring it. That's why they have those nice deep bowls, the beautiful curves that everything just kind of slides over. So modern pots and pans offer multiple avenues for you to create multiple dishes, come together and create this greater spell, or a little teeny tiny spell. If you only need something that's a little teeny tiny, you can create simmer pots. You can make it easier and less stressful to make your favorite dishes, like the vodka sauce Shannon talked about. And that moves us into other convenience appliances in the kitchen. A lot of people will say, well, you need to make your pesto in a real mortar and pestle. Why?
I don't do that. And I have a real mortar and pestle.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Put it in a food processor. It'll be delicious and you'll have pesto faster.
In fact, that's exactly how I make my pestos. It all goes into a food processor all at the same time and done.
A food processor is an incredible magical tool to help release the potential. It's tearing and ripping apart and chopping up whatever you put in there. And as it's doing that, you're probably able to smell the ingredients a little bit better. If there's onions and basil and stuff in there, or you're able to see, like, oh, hey, yeah, there's a lot of liquid coming out of this. That's going to be really good part of the sauce or whatever it is you're making. But it's basically pulling the potential, extracting the potential out and giving you greater access to it, whether it's flavor or whether it's magic.
With a lot less effort.
Yes, a lot less effort. That's one of the things that I love about my modern kitchen. I've been to reenactment sites and participated in using older style kitchens, but that's one of the things that modern kitchens offer is a lot less effort and stress. which frees up more of our energy to imbue into whatever it is we're crafting.
Whether it is meant for magical purposes or just nutritional purposes, you can dedicate more energy to the things that are important and less to the actual making of the prepping work. Like, you don't have to lug a massive bucket of heavy water a couple of times over into the kitchen to make sure you have enough water to clean your vegetables, to make sure you have enough water to have in your saucepan for whatever you're going to use it for, to wash the dishes later on. That takes a lot of effort. Just prep work.
Right.
That's not even the mise en place of cutting and julienning or chopping your vegetables and or chunking out your meat for however you're going to use it.
Exactly. So you can focus a lot more on the actual food preparation and a lot less on ancillary efforts.
I think it's overlooked within the aesthetic of witchcraft and kitchen witching that humans in general, as a species, we prefer to do things smarter, not harder.
Yep.
And if you're just leaning towards having to do things with the mortar and pestle because of the aesthetic, that's not necessarily the smarter appliance right. to use in this situation. It was at one point in time the smartest appliance you could use because you didn't have the food processor.
Right. If our ancestors had had food processors, they would have used them.
Oh, yeah. In a heartbeat, they would not have hesitated.
No. In fact, people being snooty about different tools and such is a little bit of a modern thing that came about when modern kitchens became more mainstream in the 20th century. In the latter half of the 20th century is when Julia Child revolutionized people's access to high-level cooking techniques like French cooking and new flavors, etc., by having the very first cooking show ever on television. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that she always embraced and was criticized for was that even though she had been educated at the French Laundry, she loved new gadgets. When the microwave became something that was making an appearance in homes, she was like, well, isn't that magnificent?
Mm-hmm.
Look at this. You can have a baked potato in as little as 5 minutes. That's amazing. When food processors became something that was showing up in kitchens, she featured one on her show and said, look at how quickly I can chop an onion with this. She was letting people know, if you have access to this, use it because it's going to make it easier for you to create something amazing.
Mm-hmm.
With both of those things as well, we have to think about people who might not have full use of their hands or full use of all of their limbs and might have to use certain things and certain devices in order to cook for themselves.
Yeah.
That doesn't make their working any less magical. Just because they can't grip a pestle or chop all of their own veggies with a knife themselves.
Even individuals who don't have the same motor restrictions as others can't chop all types of vegetables. For instance, myself, I cannot cut an onion. You know, I don't care if you tell me, oh yeah, well, here's a trick, you know, cut with the grain or hold a match between your teeth and it won't make you cry. I cry. Every single trick fails for me. I will always end up crying. That means I cannot cut a full onion. Half the time, I can't even cut half an onion. So,
and your family eats onions with every meal.
Yes. We do not skimp on the onions. I mean, if it calls for onions, we add 3 times the amount of onions. If it doesn't call for onions, you still got an onion.
Mm-hmm.
There is no lack of onions in any of our dishes. I can't cut an onion to save my own life because as soon as I start cutting an onion, I start crying. I don't pretty cry. Even when it's onion induced, I don't pretty cry. I can't see once I start cutting an onion because I'm crying. If I can't see, I can't cut because then I'll cut my finger.
Right.
So scissors and choppers are really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you need to use a one-handed chopper or egg opener or anything like that, that is actually a form of magic in and of itself because it's giving you the ability to independently put this together. If you need to use an assistive device, just use it.
Don't worry about the aesthetic. Don't worry about people trying to tell you that you're doing it wrong. If you need the assistance, take it. Use it. Use it proud.
And you don't have to. You can use your stove and your oven and all your pots and pans to cook these elaborate things. That's what I like to do. Shannon likes to do that too when she has the chance, just because that's what we like to do when we can that doesn't mean that you ever have to do that.
No.
Other things can also be magical. The microwave, that's basically a different kind of hearth. I am anti-microwave. I don't like them. I don't like how big and clunky they are. I don't like how noisy they are when they're trying to cook stuff. I don't like the way that they cook stuff. But if somebody else wants to have a microwave so that they heat up leftover soup that they spent hours on the day before and now they're exhausted, or you need sustenance in the form of microwave pizza after performing a spell that's not in the kitchen, use your microwave.
It's a very handy dandy tool to have, especially when you're low on energy.
Yes.
I happen to agree with Megan. I am not the biggest fan of microwaves. The food that comes out of microwaves does not taste the same to me.
Mm-hmm. But if you love your microwave,
use it.
Go for it. And you can make it a magical tool in the same way that you would consecrate and bless your oven and your stove.
Mm-hmm.
Put a candle on it dedicated to Brigitte. She does not care.
Nope.
I work with Brigitte in the kitchen. She's one of my pantheon deities, and she primarily shows up when I'm cooking.
Mm-hmm.
If you work with her or you want to dedicate your cooking space to her, then put a candle or a votive or something along those lines on top of your microwave. Draw a sigil in Sharpie on the bottom of it if you need to hide it. And then if you feel like you want to create something really special out of there, there's all kinds of really good steamable stuff available in the grocery store now. You can get rice, you can get vegetables, you can get potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You can still make something that's delicious and put together, even if you have limited time, energy, motor skills, etc. Mm-hmm. It also makes it really nice if you're living in a dorm and without access to a kitchen.
Megan and I have made some very handy dandy things in our dorm during college.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You get real creative with ramen.
Yes, you do.
So air fryers are another of these appliances that can substitute for a hearth. A lot of people love them because the stuff that comes out of them tastes better than it does for any other cooking method. I feel like air fryers are their own thing, though. I feel like they're like super associated with fire more so than a microwave or a stove, even though it's an air fryer. And I think it's because they use such high heat to cook things. That's how they get them crispy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really into fire energy or you need more fire energy in your life, an air fryer might be a good way to go.
Air feeds fire.
Right.
So it's aptly named.
Mm-hmm. You can throw some dino nuggies in there, party wings, or whatever else if you need some of that fiery energy in your life and make something that's super infused with that vitality.
Mm-hmm. We have an air fryer, but it happens to be part of our oven. So I just associate it with fire in the hearth because it's part of the fire in the hearth.
Right. You've also got options for countertop ovens that are maybe combination steam, convection, etc. that a lot of people are really enjoying for small spaces. So if that's something that you have in your space because you live in a New York closet apartment. And you don't have space for anything else, and that can be a mini hearth. And I would associate that a little bit more with water because of the steam element that usually comes with them. There's also something to be said for modern brewing methods for things like coffee and tea. When you look at a regular drip coffee maker, if you replaced all of the plastic parts with glass, you actually have something there that is really innovative and inherently alchemical.
Mm-hmm. We have the drip coffee maker for the week, but every other weekend or so, we use a percolator, which is all metal.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that the coffee from the percolator in the metal on the stovetop is way more delicious than the drip coffee.
Right, but either method is super valid and is going to create a magical brew, particularly if you practice coffee magic, which I know you do.
Yeah, I enjoy my coffee magic, and I enjoy my coffee magic straight from the percolator.
Yep. But if you think about the coffee maker as a water element, it's its own self-contained little cauldron system.
Mm-hmm.
You could use it for other things. For a while, we gave up coffee and were drinking black tea. And we would put a bunch of tea bags into a coffee filter inside the coffee maker, the tags draped out. So, you know, they didn't add to the taste, but it worked just fine. We got some really good tea out of that.
Yeah, that's what I do in my office. I have a little drip coffee maker that, yes, I do use for coffee and coffee magic when I'm working. But I've also used that just to make hot water. And I've also used that to do tea the way that Megan just mentioned.
Right. And you can make your own loose tea blends when you're sick too. It's a very low energy way to make a lot of tea all at once and keep it warm because it's got that hot plate on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's a good way to make hot water if you need it in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can put whatever you want in that coffee filter.
Yeah.
You can put dried hibiscus and mint and dried blueberries and just let the water wash down through and you have this really unique infusion. So again, even though my coffee maker gets hot, I associate that with the water element and I love my coffee maker.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, but opposite is the refrigerator, the freezer, the ice maker, and the water dispenser. So the refrigerator is like that modern well house. Mm-hmm. And you would store a lot of stuff that needed to be kept fresh down in the well house because, or the spring house, rather, either one, because the water flow would produce a cooling effect right around the edges of the well or the spring. So you could actually build a small building with a little bit of ventilation and create like a little cold hut.
Mm-hmm.
Or kids would put their bottles of milk for lunch in the nearby stream if the school had a stream running by it to keep it cold.
Mm-hmm.
Refrigerators, freezers, ice makers, they enable us to do that right in our own homes, which if you think about it, if somebody from that time period entered a modern kitchen would be like, wow, this is amazing. I wish I had this.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the really interesting magic of keeping our food fresh for longer because cold inhibits bacterial growth, fridges and freezers are super useful in all kinds of magic.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly if you are trying to stop or freeze something.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best ways to banish someone from your life is to put their name in the freezer.
Yeah. Freeze them out.
Yep. You can either just stick a piece of paper in the back of your freezer where you won't really see it with their name on it until you forget about that, or you can put it in a jar with other things.
Mm-hmm.
What those other things are is up to you. If you know, you know. But even though it's a symbol of freezing, stopping, stasis, fridges and freezers are also magical symbols of preservation.
Yeah, and that's a very important aspect to remember. Uh-huh. Things don't become stagnant in the freezer, even when it's freezer burned.
Right.
It's still a preservative method.
Right. You may not be able to eat it after it's been freezer burned.
No. But it's not stagnant.
No, it's a different kind of spoilage. But that means that you can actually use your fridge and your freezer for some really powerful protection magic.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to placing someone's name in the freezer to banish them out of your life, you can also put certain things in the freezer to help protect them. Like if you want to protect your finances, put some money in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in some circles, it's traditional to store money in the freezer anyway, as a way to kind of keep it safe from random visitors. But magically speaking, especially if you put it in a special money clip or a special container, it can help you keep what you have while you work on making more.
Yeah. Preserve what you have while you manifest more elsewhere.
Yep. Similarly, you can also use it to protect people. So if you make a little effigy of someone, or you again write the name of a loved one on a piece of paper, stick it inside of a mitten or something warm. They're protected mm-hmm. from the cold, but they're also being protected and hidden away from the forces that want to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
We use our fridge to make things cold. So you can have a culinary spell that is hot, it's spicy, it moves the energy really fast, or you can have a cold salad with the similar intention, but it's long-term planning.
Mm-hmm.
A really good example of this would be an antipasti salad. I love an antipasti salad. My family has a recipe that my father got from someone who was second generation Italian at one of his jobs early in his career, and it's delicious. It has pasta and it has some really delicious cheeses in it. There's a little bit of a dressing with a little bit of red wine. And one of the things that kind of sticks in my mind magically is it has a lot of preserved and pickled items in it. So it's got olives, two kinds of olives, and it's got a lot of preserved meats, salami, pastrami, things like that, that are cubed and put in it. And that combination of it being eaten cold and it having preserved things in it can turn it into a spell for long-term abundance, growth, healing, whatever you're trying to do, particularly with the correspondences of those ingredients.
We still haven't figured out how to make things proportionately for the people amount, the amount of people that are eating at the table. So our freezer gets, like, when we're making a red gravy or red sauce, depending on where you are in the world, a marinara or a meat sauce, we tend to make enough to feed the entire village. So most of our sauce ends up in the freezer in order to preserve that, and it only gets better after it's frozen. Same thing with chili. It gets spicier and deeper once it's stored in the freezer. When I'm cooking one of these two things and I'm using culinary magic in the process of practical cooking, the magic that the freezer adds to it brings more depth and nuance to whatever spell I've incorporated into whatever dish I've decided to make and need to freeze.
Yeah, the stasis enhances the flavors because it's allowed to just sit and do what it does.
Yeah, I also use the freezer for protection magic, not in the same way that Megan mentioned, although those are really good ways that I might start doing if I can find room in my freezer for. I grow my own herbs and or I will purchase fresh herbs that I can't grow. One of the ways that I've preserved my fresh herbs is actually by putting it in the freezer, and I have mint currently frozen in my freezer. Originally, I didn't intend to do anything more than freeze it because it was there for preserving all of the magical properties that mint has, including protection of the people around you and yourself, purification and cleansing properties to keep things preserved in a state of magical cleansing, and to preserve the attraction of abundance. Not abundance in and of itself, although I'm sure mint can be used in that way. I use basil in that way, but I use mint in the way that it attracts abundance. So that way it's always in a circular spiral of motion of, well, if I ever run out, I know that frozen mint is going to bring it back.
Right, so it's preserving the properties of the things that you want to use as well.
Yeah, but I know that I can also take that frozen mint out and put it in like a green tea, mint, cucumber, iced tea.
Right, the refrigeration also gives us more access to a greater variety of foods year round as well. So it would be better for us to eat seasonally, but even if we were eating seasonally, we would be able to freeze a lot of stuff. My dad talked about how when he was younger, he didn't love vegetables that had been preserved. He preferred fresh ones because my grandparents canned a lot of the stuff that they pulled from their garden. But once they got a deep freeze and started freezing their corn and their green beans and their peas, he started liking them a lot more because it preserved the flavor and the integrity better than the canning process did. So they were allowed to store that abundance away for later and keep it nice and fresh. Also, things like eggs were able to store in large numbers. About every 2 to 3 weeks, my wife and I go and we buy 60 eggs. And they stay fresh for almost a month while we're using them.
The rotting egg sulfur smell does not permeate from the refrigerator because you have too many eggs.
Right. And the same thing with dairy. It keeps dairy fresh. And those are two extremely valuable foodstuffs that our ancestors held in high regard because there was so much nutritional value associated with them. So, again, if you want to make your fridge more of a sacred space, obviously clean it regularly. I need to scrub mine. There's no shame, but clean it regularly. You can have a lot of fun with this. You can get magnets. You can use dry erase, especially if your fridge is stainless steel. You can also store things on top of your fridge that are sacred that you only use every once in a while. But if it's a place of preservation, you can store things up there like a piggy bank or somewhere where you put your spare change. Top of the fridge is a good place for it. It both hides it and it keeps it energetically safe as well. If you have a cat that likes to hang out in the kitchen or likes to hang out in high spots, make them a little hidey hole on top of your fridge so that they can be an additional guardian that is also protected. You can also create sacred spaces in the kitchen near the hearth for your pets if they like to be high up. Or if they prefer to be warm and you have like a radiator for your senior dog or cat, they love hanging out with you where you hang out the most.
Yeah.
As long as you're a tidy person, it shouldn't affect the cleanliness of the space at all.
You know, like Megan said, as long as you're tidy and you clean on a regular basis, having any animal in the kitchen really shouldn't be too much of a problem. It does potentially pose a problem when said cat and or dog, like my cats and dogs have tended to do, want to put their noses in your magic.
You have to keep those sensitive little noses away from the heat.
So just be aware of your magical buddies when in the kitchen because they cannot have the same range of food that most humans can have.
Right. But most of us also feed our pets in the kitchen. So you can make their little space a sacred space too, if you want to, whether there's a resting space that you make them in there, or it's just the place that they enjoy their kibble or their canned food. Our cat drinks out of a cup because that's what he likes.
No judgment.
Yeah.
I like cups too. No judgment.
Yep. He prefers it. So that's another aspect. In ancient times, animals and humans alike would gather around the fire, and we still do that today, just in more modern ways. And there's no reason not to welcome your animal into the modern hearth as long as they can behave themselves. That's all we have on our topic for today. Thank you so much for listening in, and we hope you'll join us again soon. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest for more witchy wisdom, both here and on our blog. And you can also check out our original art on Society 6 for sacred decor and more. Thanks again for joining us. Go make some magic and live your best life.
Bye.